Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back.
That's right, that's
right. It's going to be us. We can drink and talk shit as much as we want. Nobody can say anything to us.
D.L. Hughley, Uncut.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to D.L. Hughley Uncut. I am, of course, am D.L. Hughley.
I am Jasmine Sanders.
What up, everybody? It's Kyle Hughley, a.k.a. Special K.
There it is. It's very interesting, So I guess it's Black History Month, and the NAACP was created in 1909, so that's a Black History fact. I didn't get that in school because I didn't go to school, but our...
I'm glad you said it.
A white guy had to tell me that. He goes, here's something your people would find interesting. Did you know?
The NAACP.
Your darkies are going to love this fact. Let me tell you this. A lot of stuff is going on. I guess the impeachment trial, his second impeachment on Donald Trump.
Number two.
So he'd been, the first one, he was first impeached last year. And now in February of last year, now he's impeached again. So his second impeachment came out faster than a fucking Avenger movie.
I like the fact that it's happening in February.
Yeah,
Black
absolutely.
History Month.
Right.
I like this plot twist better, too.
And it's very interesting because the argument seems to be that you can't hold a president responsible for a crime he committed while he's in office after he's out of office.
Which
so that
makes
would
no
give,
sense.
That would be unprecedented. So that means the presidents in the last 2 weeks could break all kind of laws. It's really a simple thing. Either you love the Constitution like you and you're going to uphold it, or you do not.
Correct.
Right.
Or all this patriotism that you've been talking about, right, for years and how important it is to you. Think about how people feel about the flag. But look at what they did with the flag. They tore it down and put up a Trump flag, right? And meanwhile, if the flag in any particular situation that most people don't like, they will persecute you to the fullest.
And then they shit all over the Capitol floor, which Black people have been upset about a lot. We have, we've had any number of things. But we never went, no justice, no peace. We never done that.
No.
And the whole thing is based on a lie that the system, that the election was somehow rigged, that people in Philadelphia and Atlanta and Detroit somehow rigged the system like a bunch of Black people. And usually when something is nigger rigged, it don't work.
Well, temporarily it works, but not for long.
Usually you messed up a perfectly good stereotype.
But what's interesting, too, though, is the reason his first team of lawyers quit was because he wanted them to focus on the fact that the election was rigged. And they were like, we're not going to win with that.
No.
We got to go with something
else. I think that he's counting on the one thing that he was able to count on last time, the cowardice of, because I don't think that there are 17 decent human beings on the Republican side right now.
No.
I think that they're cowards, and he's counting on their cowardice. So I think that, if you're on the Republican side and you're voting to acquit after all that you've seen, instead of holding your hand over your heart to take an oath, put it over your nuts, because that's what you're trying to protect. That would be
holla.
That would be better.
Well, let me ask you something, since we're talking about cowards and whatnot.
Sure.
Not that I'm calling this person a coward.
Sure.
I want to be clear about that. I mean, I kind of am.
Sure.
But what's up with your boy Van Jones?
He's not my boy. I can't stand him. He is a coward.
What's going on with him?
He's a shoe booty ass Negro.
So he really says that of course, he was on The View and Sonny Houston.
Yeah.
She took it to him.
Yeah.
And he says, I feel like I was bombarded and railroaded.
He felt like
it was
ambushed.
And I was ambushed.
Well, now you know what it's like to be a Black person. That's pretty much, anytime you and Meghan McCain are going to do a film on unity, and the divisiveness in this country is a really simple thing. It's come about because there are people who believe that they should be entitled to all the rights of an American citizen, and there are people who don't believe that they should. That's really the divisive argument that we're having right now. And I think Van Jones has done some tremendously good things, but he's self-serving and he's a chameleon. He cried over when Donald Trump gave a speech. He cried when Joe Biden gave a speech. This nigga's going to be dehydrated by the next administration.
But you know, my biggest issue with that is I remember I called you when I saw him cry, and I was so angry because I felt we rarely get to see black men cry, right? Generally, when you see images of black men, they're not crying. They're either angry or, you know, somebody's making up something about them. Right. And when we do see one cry on a national platform, it's him crying over Trump.
I just think that if you look at what happened at Benedict College when he spearheaded the group that was going to give him, you know, a bipartisan award.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't let any of the people, it was an HBCU, but he didn't let any of the students attend. Mm. And then he derided Kamala Harris for not staying there and refusing to be a doormat for him. It's interesting because if Kamala had taken Van's advice and led his example, she wouldn't be vice president.
Absolutely
right now.
That's true.
Absolutely not.
Listening to that shoe booty ass nigga will get you out of a job.
Well,
quick.
He says he stands by everything he's ever said and done. He says he's done more for most people in terms of prison reform and all of that. And
well, I think that he's drunk. Listen, there is no disputing the fact that Van Jones was integral in doing a lot of things for people for prison reform. He didn't have to swing from Trump's nuts to do it. He didn't have to do that. He didn't act like that. He didn't have to shine Obama shoes to, you know, there was this thing. He was gleefully taking pictures with Jared Kushner and Candace Owens and people like that. Yeah. That was opportunism. And people called you out on it. And be a man and live with it. Yeah. You ain't the first person to get ambushed.
He was waiting to do that.
So
for
I
sure.
just.
But I don't think he was ambushed. I think I get it. He was there to talk about, you know, one thing. But listen. There's no way he could have come on that show and Sonny not asked him or presented him with the fact that black people don't trust you anymore,
man. Why you bullshitting? They don't even fuck with Meghan McCain. They don't even
that
fuck with
part.
Her. They literally don't fuck with her. Right. I remember Meghan McCain right after the riots. Well, look at what they're doing to our city. And one of our neighbors came out and said, I walked outside. There's nothing wrong in front of here. So she, in essence, became Karen. I just think that there, when you have to consider the source. And if that's who you're teaming up with to edify your position, to re-edify your position with black America, you could understand why it didn't go well.
Yeah.
This country musician, Morgan Wallen, you know, he said nigga.
Oh, said that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
First off, he said nigga, and then they took him off the radio station.
Yeah.
But ironically,
Spotify,
he has the number one show on hip hop station. See, like, and they took him off all of that, and his record sales still soared.
They quadrupled. Mm-hmm. They went from like 5,000 to 22,000 in sales.
I think that it's ironic that we make these placatory gestures, that really don't solve anything. His fans are still behind him. So he said nigga in his record sales. So that just proves niggas are good for business.
Yeah.
So
racism sells.
But I just like when they try to use that moral equivalency, like, well, how come they get to say, like, they always blame the word nigga on hip hop. Like, they say nigga in hip hop all the time. Well, nigga's been the American lexicon since the 1700s and hip hop been around since 1975. What came first, nigga or the Sugar Hill Gang? Like Mark Twain or Grandmaster Flash.
But I think they do believe they have the right
it's
to say
their word.
The word. But this is how I feel about it. To me, and you actually made this, I guess, example. And that is the N-word, no, hurts us more than the word nigga.
Right. No,
like,
you can't have
that
job. No, you can't.
Right.
Yeah, right. So
you can't have this loan. You can't have the same education as my children. You can't have the same opportunities. So,
I remember when they took Mark Twain said nigga a bunch of times in Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn, and they replaced that word with slave. And I don't know about you, but I'd much rather be a nigga than a slave. Like, if you call me a nigga, I could be insulted, but I go to my house. You call me a slave, I got to go with you. Like, it's, but it's interesting because we are now in a position where they try to pretend like they're making these gains. I don't fault somebody for having a divergent thought from the group. I think that, particularly when you're at home, you should be able to say whatever the fuck you want to say.
Well, he hadn't gotten home yet.
But
he was still on his way.
Well, I tell you what, he could shoot somebody for being on his property and not go to jail.
He should have waited until he got in the house, though.
Right.
On the porch.
Right. Yeah, so.
Something.
Just in a word to the wise, if you're going to say nigga, say it from your porch.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, the holidays have been over, and that means we're all out of excuses, which means it is time to get back to the workout grind. And that means spring essentials from Mack Weldon. The first thing I did was order my Mack Weldon Stealth Boxer Briefs. They have the body mapping technology and fabric mesh zones that give me the best breathability and support. These things are just great. Now, Mack Weldon will refund your money and let you keep them if you don't love them. Then I got my Ace Line sweatpants. They're great for workouts and for around town when you want to feel comfortable, but you don't want to look like you're wearing sweats. Man, I love those things. This is the stuff you need to get going with your New Year's resolutions. So for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/uncut and enter promo code uncut. That is MackWeldon.com/uncut. Promo code uncut for 20% off. Mack Weldon is reinventing men's basics.
Welcome back to DL Uncut. Our next guest is a legendary civil rights attorney in Alabama, representing and working with icons like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks. Please welcome Fred Gray.
How are you?
Hi, Mr. Gray.
Now, I got to clear something up. Well, first off, I know you're a man of Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. It's nice to see you. How are you, Fred? You all right?
I'm fine. How many friends are you?
I'm wonderful. You cannot be 90 years old. You can't be.
He's like, well.
Well, he didn't hear me, so obviously.
He's like, am I not yet?
So it's interesting because you have been through a lot of stages in this country and from a community standpoint and in this country's development. Is Alabama and what's going on now, is this closer to you, which you remember times being, or further away?
Well, it isn't any closer. We made some progress, but we have a long way to go to be where we need to go. But we are headed in the right direction. At least we were at one time.
Right. So when you say we were at one time, what's changed?
Well, I don't know. We've had a change in administrations, and each administration who comes in changes. And, of course, the last administration was not one that continued the progress which had been being made in the field of human and civil rights.
When I hear people talk about we are a divided nation, I you know, and obviously I have a different we have traversed different times, but I think consistently it seems to be a battle between people who want the full rights that should be afforded them by the Constitution and people who don't want them to have it. If that's, I think that is kind of the fight. The fight is, are we going to be treated like full citizens, or are we not? Or in that way, that's not division. That's not division. That's untenable to me.
It is the same fight we had since slaves were brought here in, what was it, 1607?
Right.
They were slaves, and there was slave ownership. They didn't want to be slaves, so they began to do some things toward it. So finally you had Emancipation Proclamation, and then you had Reconstruction, then you had what's called the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement, but there was a lot of things that were being done in between that time. Mm-hmm. And you have where we are now. All Black lives mean something.
Right.
Live.
Right.
Yes. Lives.
Do you think that the things you fought for and have even to this day have fought for, they are, because what would you say the most consistent thing you fought for, I should say?
Well, if we start at the beginning, my beginning really was with the Montgomery bus boycott.
Right.
But for me, it started before. It started when I was a student at Alabama, what was then Alabama State College, now Alabama State University in Montgomery. When I lived on the west side of town, Alabama State is on the east side of town. I had to use the public transportation system and found out people were being mistreated. One man had been killed as a result of an altercation on the buses. And I made a private commitment that I kept for about 40 years. And that is, I was going to finish Alabama State. I was going to go to somebody's law school because they told me lawyers help people to solve problems. And I felt we had a problem with buses in Montgomery.
Right, right.
And when everything was completely segregated, and I decided I was going to become a lawyer, not even apply to the University of Alabama because I knew they wouldn't accept me, finish law school, come back to Alabama, take the bar exam, become a lawyer, and destroy everything segregated I could find.
To that end, you did a remarkable job, a remarkable job. You had a lot of success desegregating a lot of institutions in Alabama. You also were integral, the Tuskegee experiment, which kind of mirrors what's happening now. I think that we have a pandemic that is running rampant, particularly in our communities, and there is a lot of mistrust with the vaccine. Primarily, the first things you hear is because last time we were first in line for medical treatment, if the line formed in Tuskegee. So there's a lot of mistrust. Does that mirror what you saw back today's like our people's mindset about vaccines and about the medicine in general? Does it mirror the fear and trepidation you saw back then?
No, it does not. I don't think there's any similarity between what happened to the 623 men that I represented in the Tuskegee syphilis study and the virus that is going on now and the vaccine, which has been designed for the purpose of trying to prevent persons from obtaining or getting a deadly disease. Mm-hmm. So I see no similarity between the two. The federal government was the ones who actually financed the Tuskegee syphilis study. It was employees of the federal government who caused those things. Now, of course, President Clinton admitted that the government was absolutely wrong, that what was done was wrong to them. On the other hand, you have a deadly disease, the virus, that I don't believe even started in this country. Our federal government, while it does some bad things, it didn't start the virus, and neither did it start, as I understand it, the vaccine that has come about. The vaccine was designed by others, and medical people have proved it to be about 89% or 90-some percent, one of them effective. So there is no difference, unless you're going to say because both of them are in the healthcare fields, is like apples and oranges.
Right.
They're both
fruits,
right. But they're not the same. Mm-hmm. So I don't think those persons who don't want to take the virus for whatever reason, that's fine. But I don't think they should put that on the test because of what happened in the Tuskegee syphilis study. They're simply not the same. There's no similarity between them. And as the lawyer for those men, I have taken the first shot. And next Monday, I'll take the second. And if I had any reservation about whether or not it was good or whether it was bad, I would say it. I'd have no reason not to. And I'm not defending what the government did in the Tuskegee syphilis study. As a matter of fact, I sued them. They were wrong. But they're not responsible for the virus and not responsible for the vaccine. And people shouldn't use that as an excuse they need to take the vaccine. It may save their lives.
And yet they do. I think that there is there certainly is a lot of mistrust between people of our community and the medical profession. And to your point, there are no similarities. But there is
no similarities between these two things.
Right. Right.
Now, there is plenty of room for distrust.
Right.
And there's plenty of room for distrust, even with respect to the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, but not to the extent where you would end up deciding not to take a vaccine that may save your life.
Right.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, because people are using that as an excuse as to why they should not, because they're really pushing this thing that we can't trust the government, because look at what happened during the Tuskegee experiment. And they're using that as a reason to say, this is why we shouldn't trust them. This is why we can't take the vaccine. And unfortunately, our community is going to suffer tremendously if we don't take the vaccine.
That is correct. You're absolutely right. And, if they don't want to take it, just don't take it, but don't say it's because of the Tuskegee Syphilis Study. It did a lot of bad things, and I pointed those things out to the federal government. But don't say that's the reason you are not taking this vaccine that might save your life.
Right. Yeah. It's so important to have you on, because you were actually there. I mean, you're not speaking from... You have expertise. You have had a continuum of experiences that leads perfectly to this conversation. I think that one of the things that needs to happen, I think, in order for us to be a nation that kind of moves forward, is that there does need to be trust. There does need to be this idea that, because I know for me, it is one of the rare times where I've seen the government at least pretend to be concerned about the fortunes of black and brown people, to pretend like we had to make an outreach to communities of color, because it was so devastating to those communities. And I think that therein lies the distrust, because there has never been, or at least not a lot of times in history, where that kind of dynamic has taken place, where they've gone, we're going to deliberately make an outreach because first off, we've never seen a disease like this, but this has been so devastating to people of color that we feel responsible for making our outreach to those communities. Well, I don't know that has ever happened before, which would be a shame.
Well, I was very happy to see our new president as one of the first, not Mac, one of the first resolutions that he signed was one dealing with improving relationships and the equality and equity between the races. He's recognized it. And one thing I always say, there are two major problems still confronting this nation. And one is racism, and two is inequality. And they are the same problems that we had at slavery. We've been working on them, chipping away at them, but this nation has never raised up to the problem of it. And to see and hear the president say, and what I've been saying in all of my speeches, is that we have to, one, acknowledge that we have a problem. If we don't acknowledge we have a problem, we won't solve it. And racism is a problem, and inequality is a problem. Once we find it, then the people at the top needs to say it's a problem.
Right.
From the White House to Congress to the Supreme Court to the heads of our CEOs of our educational institutions, all need to say racism and inequality is wrong. Mm-hmm. But just to say it isn't enough. Mm. We've got to come up with a plan. What we did in the Montgomery bus boycott, when we found out that when we recognized that we had a problem, we came up with our plan. Our plan was twofold. One, we're going to file a lawsuit to have these ordinances and statutes declared unconstitutional. And two, we're going to stay off of the buses until we can do so on a non-discriminatory basis. And the black people did it for 283 days and gave rise to the rise of a new leader, Martin Luther King, who nobody had heard about before that time. So then, once we come up with a plan, we happily implement the plan. And those are the things that needs to be done. We need to recognize that racism and inequality is wrong. We need to come up with a plan to solve it. And it's going to take all of us. All of us would like for all these plans to be, the problems to be solved. But while it has to start at the top, it's going to take every one of us to work hard to do away with inequality and racism.
You know, it's very interesting because you literally have, you. If we're talking about our history in this nation, you've been there for a pretty significant part of it. And what is interesting to me is even the challenges you faced, certainly with Martin Luther King and then with Rosa Parks, you represented her. It's interesting now to see people who are so against equality and so against solving some of the problems co-opt their words. Like, I'll hear people who use the speeches of Martin Luther King in a way that he would never have used them. or they'll bring up Rosa Parks for a fight she wouldn't have ever had. And so what they've done is co-opted, I think that a lot of people have been so devoid of a struggle that they have co-opted people who kind of who represent it. So it's got to be something for you to see people use the words of Martin Luther King and bastardize them in their action. That's got to be tougher to see.
Well, I understand, and people have to understand that racism and inequality is so ingrained into our culture that while we've been chipping away off of it ever since slavery, it still is engraved, and we still have to continue to have plans, and we have to change our plans and change our strategies in order to make it work. But it takes hard work. And it's not easy.
Yeah.
Because I often wonder how we can, in the face of the same racism, right, from years ago, is it possible for us to come together and do what they did during the boycotts? Could we actually work together? I know I always think back to when the whole Colin Kaepernick thing happened, and we talked about we were going to boycott and we were going to work collectively together to make our voices be heard. And then slowly, not even a week in, we just kind of backed off. And I often wonder, could we ever duplicate that kind of unity that we did, you know, way back when, in order to bring about some of the changes that we were able to see?
Well, what we're going to have to do, and this boils down to being on an individual matter. And I tell people all the time, they want me to tell them what to do in order to solve these problems. And you know what I tell them? I said, nobody told me when I was a teenager to decide to go to law school, become a lawyer, and to come back and destroy everything, segregate it, I could find. But once I decided that, there was a lot of people who helped me to do it along the way. Once they didn't know what all they knew is I just wanted to be a lawyer. I never told them about the kind, because if I had, somebody would have put some stumbling blocks in the way and I never would have done it. So I said to the young people who are out there now doing whatever you're doing, you have a lot more opportunities than I had. Don't ask me to tell you what to do. Think about it.
Right.
Work together. Strategize. Don't go out there by yourself and try to do it on your own.
Right.
Because if you do that, you're going to be defeated. But talk to some other people, and you'll find that there's some other people who feel just like you do. And you're going to find some who don't feel like you do.
Right.
But you'll find enough to come up with a plan. And before you know it, guess what? You may start a movement.
You know, Mr. Gray, you give me, I'm very cynical by nature, but I will say this. After you have seen a lot of things, and you still have a lot of hope, and a lot of optimism, even despite all the things you've seen, out of all of that, what is it that gives you the most hope? What are you most heartened by?
Well, I was very encouraged from the beginning when we were able to get 40,000 people to stay off of the buses. Then I was encouraged by each one of the movements which have come into being, whether it's the sit-ins or the Freedom Rise, the Freedom Walks, or whatever it is, came into being, to see that these people say, well, if those black folk in Alabama, and that's not supposed to be one of the best states, could end up staying off of the buses for 382 days to solve their problem. Then whatever our problems are, and we have different kinds of problems in different communities, many of which, if the underlying reason is racism and inequality, but there are other problems that you have every day. And you talk with people, work with people, come up with a plan and solve them. Don't ask me how, because I'm not going to try to tell you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much,
Mr. Gray. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping us, but not helping us.
We have a very interesting history museum in Tuskegee, the Tuskegee Human and Civil Rights Multicultural Center. You need to come and see it because it shows what has happened to our people from slavery time forward. And it also shows how the three ethnic groups, Native Americans, Americans of European descent, and Americans of African descent, all work together. And then it shows the whole history of the men in the Tuskegee Syphilis Study under one roof. Come visit us in Tuskegee.
We will indeed. I'll take you up on that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gray. Thank you for spending time.